SBS. SBS.
SBS.
SBS.
SBS Radio.
Good afternoon, Amos. Welcome to the Portuguese program.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here.
Amos, I'm sure you did a lot of research before going to Brazil about Zika and about Brazil. Your expectations were met, or what was your reaction arriving in Brazil?
Look, I spent my entire time in Recife, and the idea was to base myself there for a week or so and see how the epidemic and how the crisis over the babies with microcephaly was playing out in this one city, which is in many ways the epicenter. Sometimes you're not sure when you sort of see the media coverage of an issue whether it's going to feel as important, as vital, as much of a crisis in real life. And it did feel that way. Everybody was talking about this. You know, my translator would be telling me in restaurants that she could overhear people's conversations about when or whether they're not they might get pregnant, about what precautions they might take if they were pregnant. It's something that, particularly for women, it's a really big issue. And that was what attracted me to the story, because I couldn't imagine what it must be like to live in a place where you have no choice. There are mosquitoes everywhere and you have so little opportunity to protect yourself and you are so vulnerable. And the consequences of getting bitten by a mosquito can be potentially so terrible.
I understand the angle of your report is the human side, to show the mothers and the pregnant women are thinking about getting pregnant and the mothers with microcephaly babies. Do you think this is something that's missing out in the coverage in the world?
Maybe a little bit. I mean, I think that's often the way. A lot of the stories were about the epidemic spreading. A lot of the stories are about the scale. A lot of the stories are about the fact that we know so little about this disease and what do we know and how many people is it affecting and what measures are being taken. But I was interested in getting to know some of the people that this was affecting and trying to work out what that must be like for them. In particular, I realized that it was an issue that was disproportionately affecting people who were very poor to begin with. So the problems of poverty and neglect and underdevelopment were leading people to have this problem. And then, of course, these women didn't have the means to really deal with it. And then it's compounded by other things, you know, women whose husbands abandon them, this sort of issue. I wanted to tell those stories and to see what it must be like.
We say in Brazil that tragedy never comes alone, always comes in threes.
With company.
Could you check on this with these women, that the tragedy is compounded?
There were certainly some stories like that, like, for example, the story of Leticia, the 16-year-old, you know, who got pregnant when she was 15. I mean, that's an issue already. It's a teenage pregnancy. The father is not a part of their life at all. And then her baby has microcephaly, you know. So there's two huge issues for this family to deal with. Perhaps the third challenge for them is that they live a bit outside Recife and they weren't getting much in the way of the medical care and attention that the women in the city were getting. So I found this little girl, you know, 16-year-old girl grappling with this baby. She didn't know what the problems were that it had. She really had no idea what she should be doing. And there's all kinds of things that the mothers do need to be doing as soon as possible to stimulate the child. And so that was very sad. And then you've got Daniele, who her husband left. I mean, he didn't just leave her. He took the television and the DVD as well. She talks about waking up for a nap and finding her husband packing things up and leaving because she wasn't paying him enough attention. She wasn't doing her duties as a wife, which is just extraordinary. But you asked me before if my expectations were met. I mean, I'd have to say the thing that surprised me the most when I got there was how much hope I saw amongst the mothers and how determined they were to do the right thing by their babies. I guess I'd been expecting from the media coverage despair. And to some extent, I was looking for that because I wanted people to emotionally connect with how difficult it was for these women. But I think that period of despair maybe that they went through initially when they got the news had already become, a few weeks later, a sense of, all right, we're going to find out everything that we need to know about this condition and we're going to do what has to be done. And that was quite inspiring. I mean, I went to this rehabilitation center where there were dozens of women and their babies. And apparently a few weeks before, they'd all been in shock and they'd been in tears and they'd been depressed. When I got there, they were all laughing and smiling and sharing stories. And there was a real sense of solidarity among the mothers. And I think that's also really important. There are WhatsApp groups, Facebook groups. They're communicating constantly. They're giving each other a lot of affirmation about their babies and about what they're doing. And, you know, it makes a huge difference.
Did you have this feeling that mothers accept it like this is what was for me, a total resignation with the reality. Did you have this feeling?
Yeah, that was something that struck me quite strongly, and it took a while to adjust to, because it wasn't like they were... I can understand that that's very important sometimes, to be able to resign yourself. But I'm also used to seeing in some situations people maybe, especially if they're angry with the government for not providing enough help or for the problems that led to this in the first place, there might also be anger and resistance. And often it was just, this has come from God and this is my baby and I will love my baby. And in some cases, I felt they almost said it so often that they were trying to convince themselves. I mean, you know, if I was a young mother and I had a child with a terrible deformity, there are all kinds of dark thoughts that I would be having. You know, it would be very difficult. Kliane, though, one of the women that I filmed, had actually chosen to adopt a child with microcephaly. And when she talked about the child as her little angel, I never doubted her for a minute. She was just completely overcome with love for this infant and was a wonderful mother.
Did you have this feeling of strong wealth concentration difference? Could you see it?
No, absolutely. And in fact, Daniele, who lives in a favela, the rich house was 1 or 2 kilometres from where Daniele lived, you know. So, yeah, you have the shanty towns and then you have these huge mansions. And, of course, the people that are rich, they don't have a shortage of water. They've got swimming pools, they've got running water. They're not having to store water in containers that mosquitoes can breed in. They have air conditioning. So, you know, the women that are living in the favelas are a lot more vulnerable to this.
What was your feeling about how Brazil can tackle this issue?
I think that they accept that they can't solve it. Solving it would require, you know, a huge investment in infrastructure and sanitation and hygiene, and Brazil is not in a position where it can do that now. Maybe a few years ago, that's where some of the money should have gone. But what I guess I was also inspired by was a real commitment to do the best that they could. They're aiming at reducing the numbers, and they're brainstorming all kinds of possible other measures that could be taken. For example, if there's a woman in the favela that's been identified who's pregnant, then maybe fitting mosquito screens on her house that are got repellent in them, or whatever they can do, they will try and do. And there were a lot of health workers that I saw that are now working 7 days a week. They're visiting homes in the favelas every single day. They're doing the best they can. But it is frightening. It's frightening to think about what's going to happen the next time that there's a spike in infections. And if you're looking at waiting a couple of years potentially for some sort of vaccine, I mean, this is one of the other things, I guess, that drew me to the story, was seeing that the government was advising people to not get pregnant, to stop having sex, to, you know, cover up, to use repellent. Like, you know what that's like in the favelas. The reality of life there is...
It's hot all year round.
Exactly.
Very hot.
People don't cover up in countries like that, and they often can't afford repellent. And having unprotected sex in the first place, you can't sort of somehow say, oh, because of Zika, you just shouldn't do this.
What was your feeling about the country, about the people?
I love it. No, very, very positive. I mean, I guess you do see a lot of things about the fact that places are dangerous and you have to be careful. And I didn't personally experience that. Just my own experience wandering around Recife and Olinda. There were areas where obviously you'd want to make sure you were with the right people. But if you were going and visiting places where you knew people, everyone around you was very friendly. You know, I never felt the need to have sort of a security person with me. People are so open. And despite how difficult life is, there's a lot of warmth.
Did you have a sense that the country was in turmoil, that the situation with the government was a big issue in the country?
It wasn't something that I felt was affecting daily life in Recife, not the political crisis, but the economic crisis very much. I knew that Brazil was struggling, but I didn't have a sense until I got there of the extent of that. I haven't seen as much media coverage of how it's affecting daily life. The fact that people in hospitals and in many other places were not getting paid, you know, the fact that people were turning away, were leaving the public health sector because they couldn't work. And your comment about tragedies coming in threes, I mean, Zika and microcephaly seems to be, you know, one tragedy that Brazil's facing, and the economic recession and then the crisis over corruption and the political crisis is a third. How do you tackle a major public health emergency when you don't even have the money to pay your health professionals and when the government must be paralyzed by simply attempting to stay in power. You know, and then you've got the Olympics coming up. It's a crazy time in Brazil, isn't it?
It is. It is a very crazy time. Someone said Brazil is not for beginners, you know.
Well, I'm glad I had a few years under my belt before I went there for the first time.
Amos Roberts, this Tuesday, Dateline.
Love in the Time of Zika.
Love in the Time of Zika.
So the stories of the mothers and the stories of the women who are pregnant, who are worried about their babies, and that was the idea that we were trying to tell their story.
Amos Roberts from Dateline, thank you very much for talking to us today.
Thank you. Pleasure.